You're listening to an Iconic exclusive, which is an interview that we do with one of the industry designers or participators with 13th Age. Due to the nature of the interview, this podcast may run a little bit longer than our normal episodes, as we're just going to let the person we're interviewing talk and answer our questions, and we're going to have a good time doing it. So just be warned, this one may run longer than what you're normally used to listening to.
This is Iconic with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick. Iconic exclusive.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me tonight, as always, are Nick and Mark.
Greetings.
Hello.
We have a special interview for you today. We are talking with Richard Baker and Dave Noonan about their 13th Age compatible product, Primeval Thule. If you've spent any time in the Dungeons & Dragons, TSR, Wizards of the Coast realm, these names should be familiar. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here. Glad to be here, too.
That pause gave me just a little bit of a... I was like, oh, no, we lost him again.
No, that was Rich and I telepathically saying, you say hi first.
Rich, when I ran into you guys at Gen Con, you told me that Primeval Thule kind of grew out of your home game. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about it, where it came from? What is Primeval Thule?
I will confess, actually, it didn't really grow out of my home game. We did grow a home game out of the idea, and definitely tried it out and played it some. The real genesis for Primeval Thule was the fact that I had a very long commute for months and months and months back in early 2013. At the end of 2012, I went to work for the folks over at Goblin Works, the guys working on the Pathfinder online game. I came in to help them out for a little bit, and a great bunch of guys. I really enjoyed the work, and they have a fascinating project. But what they also had was an office that was about an hour and 15 minutes away from my house on a good day. So
ouch.
I spent a lot of time driving back and forth between my home and Redmond, where their office is. And I started thinking to myself on those long drives, you know, what needs doing? What's out there that nobody is messing around with right now? What's a really, you know, what's the thing that kind of demands attention? And the thought kind of crossed into my mind that I was really kind of sad that it seemed to me that over the last few years in the RPG business, very few people have actually been making new worlds. There's been a lot of bringing old worlds back to life, and there's certainly been a real renaissance of people making new gaming systems, like 13th Age, of course. But I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of really new intellectual properties that were out there. People just weren't in the business of making worlds anymore. And as somebody who had made some worlds before during my career, I kind of missed that. That's one of the coolest, most interesting things you can be involved with as a writer. So I started thinking long and hard about, well, okay, Rich, if you know you want to make a world, what world do you want to make? And the thing that kind of came to my mind was the idea of a world that really tried to capture the essence of what I would call like fantastic horror, something that kind of blends the sword and sorcery of Conan with some of the really sardonic, biting, cynical, mythos-themed stories of Clark Ashton Smith set in Hyperborea and Zothique and Atlantis and places like that. And I felt like there was a world there that hadn't really been done for D&D or any version of the D&D game engine in who knows how long. And the more I thought about it, the cooler and more interesting that world seemed. So I went to my friends Dave and Steve, and I said, hey, guys, I think I got a crazy idea. Here's what I'm thinking about.
And that's really, I think, the part that did rise out of our Thursday night game, just our personal game, was the company itself, Sasquatch Game Studio. Because what have Rich and Steve and I play D&D or, whatever we're playing it Thursday nights together. And so one evening, Rich sat Steve and I down at a bar and gave us each a beer and said, guys, how do you feel about Conan versus Cthulhu? And our eyes got kind of big, and, you know, there was that we ordered a couple more beers after that, and, you know, that's really, the company grew out of our gaming table, and to this day, you know, we sit at that same game table. It's our both our corporate headquarters and, you know, the place where we're rolling dice on Thursday nights.
Cool. Our chief playtesting facility, you know, all sorts of important things.
Well, cool. That's very cool. What drew me to Thule when I was looking at it is it seems to be, I don't want to say a throwback, but in recent years, say the last decade, fantasy worlds tend to be pushing more and more into the realms of high fantasy. And this was definitely a callback to, like you said, more of the traditional sword and sorcery Conan-style settings.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there is absolutely a place for high fantasy, but it was fun as we built out the continent and as we designed the game systems. It was fun to have the freedom to be subtractive, which you don't always get when you work at Wizards of the Coast, where you kind of have to throw in everything, including the kitchen sink. But we were able to say, like, you know, there are no orcs in this world. We're going to do beastmen instead. And we were able to just kind of go through the litany of classic fantasy RPG tropes and say, you know, this one works for swords and sorcery, something out of Weird Tales, but, you know, this other monster doesn't work. This race doesn't really have a big role to play in our world. And the beauty of being subtractive like that is it gives everything else room to grow. If you don't have four different sorts of aquatic, deep one style humanoids, the one you decide to keep, you can really invest with a lot of drama and a lot of story because it's not just one of a bunch. It becomes much more important.
Yeah, exactly.
So what makes it unique?
I think that the basic premise, people have played around with what they call sword and sorcery gaming, which is essentially, you know, where Thule mostly stems out of. And by the way, this just astonished me, but amongst the people who are the real sword and sorcery aficionados, they feel like their noses get out of joint if their sword and sorcery game includes too many D&D-isms. So things like, you know, having any races other than humans, having magic, having, you know, a lot of monsters that you would normally expect to find in your D&D table. A lot of those things, the real purists kind of draw back at. Well, you know, that's great. And if we were doing the Conan RPG, I would be very faithful to those expectations. But we're really trying to get something that's a little bit more fantastic than what a straight, you know, Conan pastiche would be. We're looking for something that actually incorporates, a lot of the more, mythos elements and the more fantastic, mythical elements that are kind of hiding in the background of a lot of the Conan stories, and start to lean over towards, some of the stories or histories of the Earth created by guys like Clark Ashton Smith mm-hmm. and H.P. Lovecraft, and we try to. The thing I think that kind of makes Thule unique is that it is a pretty good picture of what Earth would look like if everything that H.P. Lovecraft and Robert Howard and Clark Atchison Smith wrote about it was actually true.
Yeah, it's a documentary, really. I think the other thing that's unique about Primeval Thule is the fact that it is a multi-platform campaign setting. And when we were designing it, we knew from very early on that, you know, we're going to do this for D&D, and we're going to do it for Pathfinder, and we're going to do it for 13th Age. And at the time, we just had, you know, Rob Hainso's Word docs to work from. But it was enough. And one of, I think, my secret delights as we worked through the process was seeing those three games bleed into each other a little bit in our campaign setting. And I think because 13th Age is so innovative in terms of, all kinds of things, the icons, for example, that it was a blood donor, to extend the metaphor. It wound up permeating the whole campaign setting and moving the Pathfinder version and the 4E D&D version into some kind of cool places, too. And so Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's unique about Primeval Thule as a setting is the multi-platform thing really did, was kind of a freeing influence on us as we designed it.
It's really interesting that how you took some of the other mechanic systems and incorporated it into the creation of your world. Could you give us some specific examples of how you incorporate or how 13th Age affected it?
Well, we knew we needed to have icons because you can run 13th Age without icons. There's still some cool stuff, but icons are so much fun that you want to have them in there and be rolling for your fives and sixes at the start of the session. And so we said, okay, well, if we're doing it, we're going to come up with our 13 icons. We knew we had a world with no orcs, so the Orc King was right out, and we said, okay, well, we're going to come up with a uniquely Thulean set of 13, and that's what you'll find in the campaign setting. But those icons, some are factions and some are individuals, are in the world in all versions of the game. So, like it or not, the Pathfinder and 4E people, they get icons too, and they can port as much of that over as they want. And you guys know, as 13th Age players, it's pretty easy to port the icon system into other settings. And that's one of the things I'm hopeful for is, Pathfinder people get a taste of the icons in Thule, and that'll get them interested in 13th Age.
In the original outline for the book, we, planned on spending a couple of pages on an overview of the icons back in the section that was going to actually change out system by system, so that we were, originally in the first planning for the book, we were thinking, well, we'll put that, of course, in the 13th Age version of Thule, but we won't put it in the 4E or the Pathfinder versions. And we looked at it and we thought about it and said, actually, this is just cool, great information that, frankly, anybody playing in Thule ought to have. It's a, why not have this get shared amongst all Thule campaigns? It didn't make sense just to keep it buttoned up in the 13th Age version.
Well, one of the things I noticed that you had in the appendix, and I assume that this is going to be cross-platform as well, but you added something about narratives. Can you talk a little bit about narratives and what they bring to the game and if they are truly cross-platform?
The idea of the narrative is essentially it's what second edition D&D might have called a character kit or what fourth edition D&D might have called a character theme. It's the idea that there are some roles in society, in the world, that could be filled by characters from any number of different classes. The best example I would think of would be like the old Templar from Dark Sun, mm-hmm. right? That in the initial second edition Dark Sun, they actually made a character class called Templar to be the clerics of the Sorcerer Kings. But really, when you looked at what those guys did, some of them were soldiers, some of them were students of magic, some of them were spies, and you realize, boy, they would have been smarter if Templar would have been something you could have actually bolted on to kind of any idea of your character king, of any character class that just happens to work for the Sorcerer King. So that basic nugget of an idea kind of led us right into the idea of, In the context of Thule, what are the big stories that characters, what parts of the world might characters come from? And that gave us the idea of, okay, well, we have like the Ice Reaver, right? If you come from the frozen north and you're a barbaric fellow, yeah, you might be an actual barbarian character class, but you might be a fighter character class. You might be a ranger character class. You might actually be a shaman or a druid kind of barbarian who still comes from that cultural background, but might execute that idea by any number of different character classes. So all the narratives are is essentially in this world. We imagine that this is a world in which there are people like soothsayers, and this is a world where we think there are thieves, like thieves who belong to big guilds, and not just thief character class thief, which is kind of a silly distinction. Sorry about that. Penjandrums, because, for 10 years I wanted to put something called a penjandrum in a game. I never found an excuse to do it until I got the Thule. And as we kind of built up the idea that these are the social roles that are out there, the kinds of characters that are stomping around this world, and we're a little bit agnostic about what kind of character class you might bring to this idea. I mean, there's some leaning, of course. If you're going to be a bearer of the Black Book, a character who is knee deep in really dangerous magic, your character class is probably not fighter. But is that guy a warlock or a sorcerer or a wizard or maybe even some kind of cleric? We kind of don't care. They would all work for that story.
Yeah, it's I think the beauty of the narratives is it's sort of the flip side to the multi-platform approach. With the icons, it was a case where we took something great from 13th Age and sort of spread it out into all the versions, but it worked the other way around with the narratives. We came up with cool narratives for Thule first. You know, what do we want for want of a better word, iconic player roles to be in Thule? And we came up with those first. We came up with a big list, and then we said, okay, now how do we implement this in each of the systems? And actually, 13th Age was the easiest one of all because it's, in most cases, it's like their backgrounds and kind of super backgrounds in our case. And so it was nice because, you know, we wrote what the Ice Reaver does, and as you guys know, the mechanics for 13th Age skills are pretty basic. With your background, you know, if it's reasonable for your background to know how to do a thing, then it counts. And so the implementation was really straightforward. Now, if you get the 4E version of the book, there's a completely different and more complicated, you know, plus twos and plus fours version of it. But for 13th Age, the implementation was very straightforward because 13th Age already had backgrounds and one unique things that were just picture perfect for what we had in mind.
So what's your favorite part of Thule? Which child do you love the most?
For me, I got to say it's the city of Quotiv. That's kind of sort of that chapter is pretty much just about all my writing. I sketched out the map that Chris West turned into a gorgeous that gorgeous city map, and I just kind of really grooved on sort of thinking about it's got a strong dash of Lankmar to it, mm-hmm. but in this setting, in this world, it's just a great city. I'm really proud of it. And weirdly enough, this is a little bit of secret lore for your avid listeners. The map is actually based on St. Petersburg, Russia.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yes. Because when I try to think about what like cities look like, the first thing I do is I go and I try to think of real world cities that are in sort of similar situations. It's like, okay, I need a city that's at the mouth of a big river that serves as a serious freeway for trade. And St. Petersburg was the one that jumped out at me. And I said, I bet people don't know what St. Petersburg looks like. I think I can get away with adopting that for my map of Quotiv.
That's awesome.
Mother,
I think Rich came up with one similar to me because I'm going to pick a map thing too, actually. My favorite thing about Thule is that I had the honor of getting to do the continent map. And I love like old National Geographic maps. I just think that's the gold standard in a map. They're just, when I was a kid, I'd get them at garage sales and just pour over them. And to this day, I could probably tell you more about medium-sized towns in Poland than any right-thinking person ought to be able to do because of maps like that. And so when we did the Primeval Thule continent map, there are more locations listed on the map because I wanted it to have a certain amount of information density. So there are more locations, and especially more adventure locations, than we could possibly fit into the book. So there are just a bunch of so a lot of it was me just plopping cool spots on the map and coming up with evocative names that, even names that we didn't have room to detail. So they're for the GM, and the GM can do whatever he wants with the Yellow Claw Ruins and the Gloamwood, or the Spirit Spire of Urdekzom, for a few days I did nothing but come up with sort of taglines that you'd see on the front of Strange Tales magazine and just plopped them onto the map. And that is about the most fun I've had in cartography in forever.
Well, that's actually one question I had. Do you have a map of the entire continent available?
Yes. It's for people who got the PDFs. If you check if you check the site, you should have an updated. I forget what it's called, but you should have an update that gives you a PDF of the poster map. And then for people who have the physical version, those all come with a poster map of the continent tucked in, and it's what 24 inches by 30, so it's a nice big poster map.
And like I said, it was something that we added to the PDF bundle. We are obviously it's available through DriveThruRPG. They were the folks who are handling all our PDF bundling for the different sorts of rewards of the Kickstarter. The map did get added after the initial set of files, so you probably did receive, if you were one of our backers, a reminder or a note saying, hey, you've had something added to your bundle. To get that, you'll actually have to go and download it. But now that it's there, I'm pretty sure that's available with the PDF. If you didn't back us in the Kickstarter, you should be able to just get that when you buy the PDF. I'll have to check on that.
Well, that's great.
Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, we certainly have no reason to keep people from the map.
Yeah. If it's not that way, we'll go back and make sure it is that way, because obviously we view the map as integral to the book.
When I got my drive-through link, it came with the map. So
super good. That's what it was supposed to.
And I think we even later, I remember doing this during Gen Con, and a lot happened during Gen Con, so my memory might be a little bit fuzzy, but I'm pretty sure we did a second version of the map that was a little more low res in terms of some of the textures, just so it would be better for people on mobile devices, because, you know, the thing weighs in at something like 100 megs in real life, you know, the print version. And, you know, that's just a beating if you're trying to look at it on your iPad. So we did a lower res version that's better for mobile devices, too.
Yeah, I think we got it under 50, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as someone who uses mobile devices, I appreciate that, 'cause I know how those big PDFs can really bog down the processor. So as we look to the future, what's on the horizon for Thule?
I think it's my responsibility to come up with content to cover every single dot on the map now.
Well, I like big maps, I'm not going to lie, and I love poring over them, and so I'm looking forward to what you may have included in that.
The more serious answer, though, is that we would love to revisit Thule, and I'm personally pretty certain we will, but we don't want to get too far down the road on that until all of our Kickstarter responsibilities are taken care of and, you know, all our backers are taken care of. So we're intentionally being a little bit quiet about future plans for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I will say is definitely on the short-term horizon, I mean, within the next couple of months, we do have a set of short adventures that are, you know, included with the Kickstarter. The adventures, Legendary Games and the Accursed Trio and David Floor pitched in to offer to help out with our Kickstarter. So when we get those, put together and cleaned up and dressed up and you know, all ready to post, those will be going up. So there will be, plus we actually have one of our own that we're supposed to add too. Don't want to forget that one. So there's at least four more short adventures that are all going to populate our PDF bundle, hopefully before the end of the year, just to kind of provide you with more interesting things to do in Thule. And that's all stuff that's just included with our Kickstarter. We'll probably go ahead and make that, you know, available to if someone wants to come by and purchase that at drive-through. We'll be more than happy to make those available commercially too. But mostly it's about making sure that we're taking care of our backers first and foremost. Beyond that, looking down the road, we've had a lot of inquiries about seeing Thule in different rule systems. We're obviously looking at that, pretty carefully. And, you know, as Dave said, there's a ton of content that is kind of hinted at by the world that, you know, who wouldn't want to see more Thule monsters and more Thule adventures, bundled up for people to play around with.
And on a super personal note, I'm going to be running Thule in 13th Age for Rich and for Steve, and I might as well, take write in clear handwriting when I'm behind the DM screen, and that stuff could turn into products too. I love 13th Age, and the thing about it that's, I think one of the things that's most different about it compared to the other settings we've worked in is that there's a lot of territory available. That it's, right now with Pathfinder, there's probably thousands of monsters that are already written, but that's not the case in 13th Age. There's still a lot of room for cool swords and sorcery things that'll contribute both to Thule, and then I love 13th Age, and I want to kind of give back some design to it as well, and I want to make cool monsters that any 13th Age player can use, and, cool magic items, and, all the bits and bobs of our campaign setting that, you could port into whatever your 13th Age game happens to be.
Well, I know that as a 13th Age GM, I am always excited about stuff like that, so, you've got my money whenever it comes out, so... Well, gentlemen, I know the PDF is available on DriveThru right now. When can we expect the physical book to hit friendly local game stores for 13th Age?
Well, it is.
That's a little bit tricky, just because we are. In fact, we've been going back and forth with our printer in China just over the last week, nailing down 10 different little tiny issues about really technical minor stuff about the print run. But if all goes well, and take this with a big caveat here, I hope that we will be receiving a pallet of books from China sometime by the middle of December. We'll then obviously have to break that out, stuff them in envelopes, mail them out to all our backers. Some number of those books will actually be directed straight on into distribution, but exactly when they'll actually reach your game stores, it kind of depends on how fast the boat from China is. We just don't know for sure.
That's fair.
And the other great unknown is customs. Customs,
yes.
Is for companies our size anyway. Customs is kind of a black hole. Your stuff can clear in a matter of days or in a matter of weeks, but you get no information during the process, and you're just kind of waiting for the proverbial phone to ring. And so that's the other thing that makes us even providing a reasonable estimated date a little tricky.
Sure.
Once U.S. Customs gives it to us, then things get a lot more predictable.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you can, the way to speed that up is to call them every day and complain really loudly, and that'll just speed it right up.
That's right, yeah. The U.S. government is known for its
responsiveness.
Responsiveness and its tenderness in dealing with phone calls. So,
if you wanted my wild guess, and like I said, this is understand that I'm giving you a wild guess. I believe that the 13th Age Primeval Thule books will be available in game stores sometime around middle of January.
Okay, so early 2015, best case.
Yeah, but I could be off by, 4 or 5 weeks, either way.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Any final words to 13th Age players about Thule?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, for starters, I think 13th Age players are going to love Thule, but fundamentally, you're going to love Thule because you love 13th Age. And as a 13th Age player, I think you've lucked out. You figured it out, and you've got a great game. And, the more that we Sasquatches can do with Primeval Thule to enhance, the fun you're already having in 13th Age, that's what we're all about. So when you asked us to be on a 13th Age podcast, I was tickled pink because, we have three versions of the book, and it's like three kids, and you're not supposed to say which is your favorite, but 13th Age is totally my favorite.
And now you guys know why I made sure Dave showed up for this.
Yes, yeah. I can totally see that. Well, when the new adventures come out, please let us know. We would love to have you back on to chat about them.
All right, will
sure.
do.
Yep.
And on your little comment of Conan versus Cthulhu, my money's on Conan.
Yeah, I think that's...
Well, I think that the plan is you root for Conan, but you bet on Cthulhu.
if there's one Howard story that really kind of best encapsulates Primeval Thule, it is, I believe the title is The Valley of the Worm, or perhaps The Valley of the White Worm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not actually a Conan story, though it sure could be. But if you just want to get a nice sense of really Conan versus Cthulhu in one snapshot, that short story is it.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.